Welcome, everyone, to the Modern Art Museum of Fort Worth Sundays with Andy program.
I am not Andy.
Here's where I begin to read. Yes, Andy is not with us. Our speaker today is Denton-based artist Matthew Bourbon. He's originally from the San Francisco Bay Area and earned undergraduate degrees in both art history and studio art from the University of California, Davis. After relocating to New York City, Matthew received his Master's of Fine Arts degree from the School of Visual Arts. He's currently professor of painting at the University of North Texas. He also writes about art for a wide range of publications, including Art Forum Online, New York Arts Magazine, and Art Lies, for which he is the North Texas Regional Editor. Matthew's art has been exhibited nationally and internationally. His work was included in recent group shows in New York and the TCU Contemporary, which some of you may have seen, Death of a Propane Salesman. And his solo exhibitions in 2009 included Crass, Cruel, and Uncouth. His next exhibition, Our Splendid Defeat, opens at Rudolph Project's Art Scan Gallery in Houston on May.
Well, it might be June now. I'm not sure.
And you can find more about Matthew and his work, including images of his work, at MatthewBourbon.com. Matthew Bourbon.
Hello, everybody. So first, I just wanted to thank Michael for that nice introduction and thank Terry Thornton for inviting me to talk today about the Andy Warhol exhibition. First thing I wanted to say is I think all artists sort of gauge themselves against other artists. They look to other artists as a kind of barometer of what they value and to set up their own sense of their path as an artist. And I think I certainly do this, but I think Warhol did this almost as a subject matter in his work. It wasn't just sort of what every artist does to sort of see where they are in the world. I think Warhol did it sort of programmatically. And so as we go through the exhibition and I talk about it a little bit more, I want to talk a little bit about that aspect of what he does. Warhol is, I think, foremost a comedian, actually. I think there's a lot of comedy in what he does. Yeah, it's a comedy that on the face of it is sort of superficial and sort of easy with its humor, but I think like any good comedian, you scratch underneath the surface and there's problems, tragedy, you know, sorrow, angst, all these other things. But on the surface, it's always light. It's always sort of this kind of ease about it. So again, as we go in and talk about more work in there, a lot of it will be, I think, about sort of this comedic approach that he has, which entails a certain amount of criticism, too. So I wanted to start here, which is perfect, because they put this painting here. And I think they did it by design. You know, this painting is of the famous, obviously, Mona Lisa, which is famously the most enigmatic painting that we have. You know, people think of the Mona Lisa as being this symbol of mystery, basically. Who she was, you know, what this expression that she has actually means. There's a kind of embedded mystery in the painting at the very get-go. And so Warhol is taking this as subject. And he uses the subject of mystery, I think, you'll see throughout much of his work. And in this instance, he makes it even more obscure. So he does his Warholian thing by repeating the image over and over, but then it's this negative of the actual painting. It's sort of washed out. He's eliminating a lot of the detail that you would get in the painting that you might hold on to and try to figure out some of those mysteries and some of those questions in the painting. And he's just taking that all out, pouring that all out of the image, and giving us even a greater, more obscure image. I think Warhol, both as a person and as an artist, he created this Sphinx-like persona. He's famous for saying that he wanted to be a machine, which is, you know, he wants to be without emotion and precise and, you know, all these things that are, you know, not human. And of course, it's kind of, he's being coy. Whenever Warhol says anything, you can inevitably think that he's going to say the opposite, maybe in the next interview. He's also famous to have other people answer his questions in interviews. So, you know, he saw the whole art project as a kind of game, but it's a game that was serious at the same time that it was sort of frivolous and silly. So the fact that this is sort of this Sphinx-like image that he's then making even more Sphinx-like and more difficult to interpret is certainly by design, and it's in his persona and the way that he acts you know, throughout the world and in all his interactions as well. You'll see that. So as we move in into this, into the next room, I want to talk a little bit about that whole Sphinx-like quality. So please, let's go ahead and start. Let's gather over here, sort of toward the center of the room, if we could. So I want to talk about these photographs, but before I talk about this, I want to just look at this wall over here. You know, the sort of traditional take on Warhol is that his work was a reaction to abstract expressionism. The sort of heroic, you know, Jackson Pollock, Willem de Kooning, Franz Kline, this sort of like grander than life kind of take on art, dealing with huge issues, the sublime, and sort of these real heroic attitudes. And sort of the traditional take on Warhol is that he's reacting against this. He's making his work more mechanical. He's, you know, creating these repetitions instead of making it a singular work. He's repeating it, which sort of devalues that sort of romantic notion of, you know, one singular thing made by the artist's brushstroke. And he's making it more mechanical by using a printing process, a silkscreen process. All of this is true, I think. But it's kind of an incomplete truth, I think. I think this exhibition, in fact, sort of expands upon that notion a little more and takes that sort of simplified critique of what he does and makes it a little more complex. So in this wall in particular, you have self-portraits. The one I want to talk about mostly is the wallpaper. So what is a self-portrait? A self-portrait in and of itself is probably the most romantic artistic project there is. It's the artist saying, I'm going to portray myself. I'm going to, you know, make this painting of my own image as a way of unraveling or expressing something about myself through the process of depicting my own image. And so there's a real romance there that, you know, if you think of Rembrandt self-portraits, there's this romance of like getting inside the artist's head through making these self-portraits. So what does Andy do? He makes wallpaper, right? So he makes this incredibly decorative thing that goes on the wall like a painting, but is really meant to be sort of background. You know, you don't really examine wallpaper. You don't go up to it and spend a lot of time examining it usually. And so he's taking something which is a portrait which is supposed to be examined in this sort of intense way, and he's, again, pouring all that sort of usual stuff out of it and leaving us with this stylized wallpaper. This is part of the comedy, I think, of what he does over and over and over. And that comedy involves a critique. You know, he's sort of commenting on the possibility of making portraits, but sort of like a Zen master, he sort of plays both sides of the game. You know, he says it's an empty process, but he's going to be really serious about that process at the same time. So he's sort of like hovering between two poles of what's possible in painting. You can look at these other portraits. I think there's different versions of them. I think, you know, like, for instance, the skull image. You know, Warhol is always giving you a mask, right? He's always just sort of deadpanned in his expression. So he's sort of silk screening himself again, simplifying his image, but then he's putting this skull on top of his head, which is a sort of nod to the history of memento mori kind of paintings, which is, you know, about death and about the coming of death and about taking life now. And so he's sort of co-opting these historical things, but he's also devaluing it at the same time and making it comical. So if we look at the photographs, this is another example, I think, of what he does. He was famous for taking photographs of people who would come into his studio. And of course, they're all famous people, famous actors, and famous artists now. What's interesting to me about this is, with one exception, when he's with Mick Jagger over here, you have the portraits of the people, which are posed at some level. There's a kind of, you know, it's either Schwarzenegger doing a pose or Sylvester Stallone doing a pose, or there's a kind of awareness of the camera where there's a kind of naturalism to their to what the photograph is capturing, but it's also they're aware that it's a picture, you know, that it's they're being that's being taken. So what I'm interested in is the difference between the people he's photographing and himself, besides this one in the pictures. And if you go and you look at and find Andy in all of these pictures, whether it's, you know, him with Joseph Beuys or over here is a great one. He again has this sort of deadpan expression, and then he's sort of looking askew to the one side or the other. And to me, it reads, you know, I kind of think of Andy Warhol like the Wizard of Oz, like he's the wizard behind the curtain, like puppet master pulling all the strings or something. And I look at these photographs and I think he is hyper aware of what's going on. He's hyper aware of his expression, and he's sort of viewing what's happening around him in the pictures that are being taken of, you know, when he's in the actual picture with the celebrities or the other artist. And he's very different than the way they are. They're like, oh, I'm giving you to the camera, you know, they're all aping for the camera, and he's like looking at them like, you know, what is going on here? But he's pulling all the strings. And so I'm really glad that these photographs were in here. I didn't know that they were going to be in here when I first decided that I would go ahead and do this. But I think it's kind of revealing about the way that he deals with his own art, too. He his attachment to the celebrities is a sort of the same kind of reaction he has to other art. He's looking outside of himself as a way to sort of comment, but also figure out the way that he is as a person or as an artist. And I think you can kind of see through to that in some of these photographs that are pretty revealing. If you look over on the other side, the portrait, the green head portrait, again, it's him as a mask, that deadpan expression again. And funnily, it's his hair, or I guess I should say his wig, is a reference to, I think, to Jean Basquiat's, right, the Basquiat hair, right, which you have a little bit over here. You know, later on we'll see he does collaborations with this artist, Jean-Michel Basquiat. And here he's, you know, he's taking the hair, he's doing his hair, you know. So he's projecting himself somehow, he's trying on these masks, these sort of modes of being. And in this case, he's trying on that look of that hair, that idea of that persona. And if, as we look at other paintings, you'll see he does that with genres of paintings too, where he's sort of trying on a genre and doing it in his sort of normally coolly detached, slightly aloof way. So if we look at these paintings over here on the end of the wall, this is an example of what he does with a genre of painting. So if he's reacting to abstract expressionism, or in this case, color field painting. You know, there's a whole series of these, by the way. There's, I don't know how many there are, Terry. There's tons of them. But so this is a sampling of how many there is of these paintings. And for me, they reference Rothko. So if you all know Rothko,